This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Mark Reardon.
There's all these new words that are just meant to keep one person from disagreeing with another person's position.
And you have to be pithy. What do I mean by pithy? How about this? Republicans want to kill your kids.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of enjoying the new opens as they play just as the audience is. That was a good one. Didn't know that one existed. Kind of like that. Yeah, Republicans want to kill your kids. We're really spending the first few minutes of the show in a very important mission here this afternoon, trying to get Sue Thomas out of the parking garage because we have great concern that she might be trapped. And I have great concern that you're going to be trapped in front of me so I won't be able to get out.
Well, if that happens, we'll send you to the entrance and you step on the weighted thing and do my pass thingy, and that should let me out.
What happened? Why is there a crisis?
There's a crisis because somebody came in today. It was a Brian Schwarzy, who is Stan Musial's grandson.
Oh, yeah.
We did a history of the Lewis Zoo. He sent me a text that said, I can't get in the garage. It's not giving out tickets. And I said, okay, well, I'll go down there and try. So I swiped my card, and that wouldn't work for him. And now I know that when you swipe it twice, that means I'm not going to be able to get out. And Ethan said, and Fred and I have been through this before, if you stand on a certain spot in a certain entryway and wave it again, then it will work.
Yeah, you're trapped, I think, basically.
And your concern is I will trap you in the garage.
Well, no, you know, because we all leave. The audience is very, very, very worried about all this. And
yes,
they're praying for us at this point. And I understand that the weather doesn't matter. Doge doesn't matter. Nothing matters except for the parking garage here at Odyssey St. Louis. But, you know, in fairness, selfishly, what happens is when we leave at the same time, as someone gets stuck, we all get stuck.
Yes, and right. It's terrible. And it takes them a long time to get out there. And it's 11 degrees.
It's 11 degrees?
Ugh, it's awful.
It's awful. All right, so let's talk about that. Because, first of all, I don't know if you can relate to this. I said this to Fred and Ethan. Ethan sort of agreed with me. I feel like that three-day weekend was like 3 weeks. I feel like it's been 3 weeks since we've been here on Friday. Today was, for whatever reason, the longest day of maybe the century so far for me because my daughter, who the alarm goes off this morning, and, you know, she's, what are all these kids doing? They're rooting for no school.
Of course.
She's been out of school more days than she's been in school. These days, really. So she comes in 6:30. The alarm goes off. Her alarm. Hey, do I have school? Well, she doesn't have the text message, so we got to look at the text message. Then I'm up and I'm, you know.
Ready. Does she?
I'm ready for the
not.
Day. No, I had to. Yeah. That's what I mean. We got it overnight. It came in at some point. Rockwood's closed. I'm surprised they haven't just closed it for the week at this point. Now, that brings us to where we are with the weather currently on a Tuesday afternoon in St. Louis, February, whatever the date is. Do we
18th.
Know what the date is? Thank
yeah.
you very much, Sue. It's the 18th. Dave Murray's going to join us. What we know is, I don't know about here in the city if there's a total. Fred, you thought you got about 2 inches in South County, right?
We had about 2 inches in South County.
I'm guessing maybe an inch where I am. However, here's the deal. Because if you look at the snow lines, and we'll ask Dave to do this at 407, it looks like where I live, which is, I live, I guess it would be east of Eureka because I'm in the High Ridge,
you
Fenton
do.
Area. But the snow line was like right about north of Eureka or maybe east of Eureka, and it said 3 to 6 inches possible. So are we still going to get several more inches? No one seems to know the answer to that question, by the way, including the meteorologists.
Oh, they don't know either. I know it's supposed to start around 4, whatever it is, and then it looks like it keeps going till like 10 o'clock at least.
That's kind of my point. Nobody knows. So I was watching Kent Earhart earlier. I'm at home and I'm doing show prep. I'm like, okay, channel 4, that's them, right?
You know,
I get confused.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard because you're not doing the channels these days, right? I'm doing it on YouTube TV. But Kent is doing the forecast, and at one point I was very concerned about him because his head was being blocked by the map of the storm, and I didn't know if that was because he had not put enough makeup on or something like that. All I saw was Kent's body and his arms pointing at the map, and his face was another map altogether.
Interesting.
But the point of that was also kind of for me to figure out what exactly the weather is going to do this afternoon. I came away with that, and this is not against Kent. He does a great job. I love Kent. I used to work with him over there when I did the movie reviews, but I was unclear as far as what we were going to encounter this afternoon.
Yeah.
And I do think we're going to get maybe a little bit more, and we'll check that with Dave at 4:07, right before Sue's News. We'll have an update here this afternoon. What went on this weekend? There's a lot of stuff I want to get to related to Doge, to some other stories, but let me just say this, because I think maybe we can all agree on something here. Somebody at a certain point here this afternoon, maybe tomorrow, the next day, is going to have to really explain to me how the hell an airplane lands and flips completely over on its top.
Mark.
Because that is crazy.
It was, and just to look at it, it was mind-boggling. I don't understand it. Have they said anything today about how it happened?
Today, they were very quiet about it. They just said, here's what we're going to be looking at, but they gave no answers.
We have some great audio from people that were on the plane. When I first saw this yesterday, and you know, we're off for the holiday, and I don't even like to sometimes monitor things when I'm not working, but I had Fox up. And I'm a little protective with my daughter around just because if something's really, really bad, we don't want her to see all that. But when I saw, I didn't even have the audio on. I saw the visual of the plane. You could see the flames that are coming around.
Good grief.
You'll hear some of the accounts of the passengers, but that did not look good. And then, you know, the question when the story broke yesterday, I don't know if you guys were following, it was very unclear as to whether anyone had passed away or there were injuries. And I think my instinct was, how in the hell is someone going to survive that, right? But think about it. We all strap in. We put our seatbelts in. We make sure our tray tables are in that, you know, locked in upright position. And all of a sudden, you're coming down, you bounce a little hard, and you flip over, and all of a sudden, the ceiling is on the ground, and you have to undo your seatbelt so you can just walk out of that plane. And they wanted to get people out of that thing very, very quickly because of the fire and the flames that were engulfing part of the aircraft.
Basically, we hit the ground and kind of just bounced up and turned on our side, and we're sliding on our side for a while. Or honestly, not as long as I thought we were going to slide for. And then we ended up upside down. And we were hanging by our seatbelts upside down for a second. And then, we made it off safely. Everyone is alive, thankfully.
Yeah, there were 20 people, I think, that were in somewhat critical condition. 80 people that were on the flight. This guy's name is Pete Kukov.
There was no warning from the pilot. There was no, like, physical warning either. I didn't feel like anything was wrong until kind of just like the second the wheels touched the ground, then it all kind of went mayhem from there.
Okay, a couple more bites from him, because then it was a little harrowing because you got to get out of the aircraft.
I was able pretty quickly to, like, so you're kind of just hanging suspended. I was pretty, me and the girl next to me were pretty, we were able to get out pretty quickly and kind of like sort of fall down to the ground, which was the ceiling, and then other people kind of needed some help, and people were sort of falling, but I don't think no one was like hurt by getting down from their seatbelts.
Yeah, here's another passenger.
As we made our descent and made touchdown, it was just a very forceful event where all of a sudden everything just kind of went sideways, and then next thing I know is kind of a blink and I'm upside down, still strapped in.
So I don't think, you know, Sue is asking the question for, but I don't think we were given a very good explanation of how all this happened. The one thing I did see, I saw a guy who was on Fox this morning who was a fighter jet pilot, who said that the speed that they were coming in, I think the speed and the angle at which that they were coming in to land at that airport were not very safe. So he also was kind of you know, positioning it in a way that some of the, he said he was getting a lot of text messages from other Delta people because it was a Delta flight, but it's like one of those carrier flights. And so it's not the regular Delta pilots. It's, you know, maybe someone perhaps with less experience. Now, whether or not that played a role or not, I'm not sure. I don't know if we're going to know that right away.
Wasn't it super windy? Like sustained winds in the 30s and gusting higher.
So that's debatable because, yeah, there's some folks out there saying that that was not a factor, but there were 40-mile-per-hour winds and gusts. So that had to be somewhat of a factor, you would think. Oh, there's Will Scharf up there with President Trump right now. Is he doing that right now? Let's, you know, we do this every once in a while. Let's see what Will and the president are doing right now.
See requirements on government departments and agencies in keeping with President Trump and the administration's broader commitment to governmental transparency. What this presidential memorandum would do is require, as waste, fraud, and abuse is uncovered, as programs are canceled, and as ultimately as taxpayer dollars are saved, this presidential memorandum would require departments and agencies to make all of the details of that freely available to the public. Lastly, we have another executive order that President Trump signed relating to independent agencies. This executive order would establish important oversight functions in the Office of Management and Budget and its subsidiary office, OIRA, supervising independent agencies and many of their actions, and also reestablishes the longstanding norm that only the president or the attorney general can speak for the United States when stating an opinion as to what the law is.
So that's Will Scharf with the president right now in Palm Beach, Florida, as it seems like they're issuing several executive orders.
This conference to explain that they're all very important in their own way. Fertilization, I've been saying that we're going to do what we have to do. And I think the women and families, husbands, very appreciative of it.
He's referring to in vitro. That was one of the executive orders.
Been contacted by some of the biggest companies in the world. And because of what we're doing economically and through tariffs and taxes and incentives, they want to come back into the United States.
Okay, well, I just wanted to dip into that because I wasn't exactly sure. All of a sudden, I see Will Scharf's face there on the television, and he's standing next to the president. So we'll keep you posted on that. But going back to the flight just a little bit here and coming up with some answers, we're all going to, you know, I think, agree on this, too. It's a little weird that we've had so many things like back to back to back. It's I still think, and I've heard this morning, I heard this from the pilot that was on Fox, it's safer than getting into your car. I think that's true, but this has been, you know, a flurry of incidents and some near misses that weren't even given a lot of amplification. There was one in Washington. There was one the night before Washington State, actually, Seattle. There was one the night before what happened in the D.C., you know, collision with the helicopter that was a near miss. But then there's this, because you got folks out there. This is Tom Costello from NBC News.
This is a Canadian air traffic control tower, and this is under Canadian authority once it crosses the border. And yet, as you know, there has been this talk about maybe staff cuts at the FAA as a part of President Trump's effort to trim down the federal workforce. And yet, as you also know, the FAA has been complaining for years that they are understaffed in critical job positions, especially air traffic control.
All right, so they're already pinning the blame on Trump. It's pretty interesting because the economic numbers that have come out have not been from Trump's presidency. It's his fault. Inflation is still running rampant. This is his fault. Anything really is his fault. That's where they're going to point to. Now, we'll cover all of that as we move through this afternoon as well. One of the topics that, you know, I think is getting a little buzz is the Department of Education, cuts to the Department of Education, maybe getting rid of the Department of Education. J.D. Tuccilli, I just like saying that name, is a contributing editor to Reason magazine. Reason's a great libertarian outlet and wrote a piece about that. And then also, you know, some of the messages from J.D. Vance in Germany, and those took off over the weekend, especially because of Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation. And we'll get to that. We have a Tuesday edition, kind of have to remember it's Tuesday, of Sue's News. Dave Murray is going to join us right before that. Plus, I have a, you guys, I told you guys I had a little surprise for my daughter and my wife. You remember what that was?
Yeah, are we allowed to say?
Right? Yeah,
the
you can say it. Yeah. So when I gave my daughter that the other night, I recorded it because Becky had to know. So I have a little video audio of Alexa realizing on Valentine's Day that she's going on a cruise for spring break. And then I also want to kind of pair that with a story about the host being really, really dumb because I'm pretty good at being really, really dumb. And this, you know, I offer these things. One of the things I wanted to say here this afternoon for you, Sue, and for Fred and the audience is I want you to remember this. for about a half an hour. No, 45 minutes from now, like right at 4:10 when we do this. I don't have to share the things about my life that make me look like an idiot. I do it because of you, Sue. I do it because of you, Fred. I do it because of the audience. I'm here for the audience to share my idiocy and stupidity and fumbles and bumbles. So maybe you can feel better about your life.
I'm not sure I do. I'm never getting out of the garage.
Well, there is that. We're off and running here. It's a Tuesday, post-President's Day holiday edition of The Mark Reardon Show. All right, let me, before our next guest here, I want to do a little prep work here because we weren't here yesterday because of President's Day, and there was a lot that happened related to J.D. Vance and Germany and Face the Nation and Margaret Brennan being stupid again and all these things. So here's something that J.D. Vance, our vice president, said in Munich last week.
The number of immigrants who entered the EU from non-EU countries doubled between 2021 and 2022 alone, and of course it's gotten much higher since. And we know the situation, it didn't materialize in a vacuum. It's the result of a series of conscious decisions made by politicians all over the continent and others across the world over the span of a decade. I can't bring it up again without thinking about the terrible victims who had a beautiful winter day in Munich ruined. How many times must we suffer these appalling setbacks before we change course and take our shared civilization in a new direction?
So some of that was deemed somewhat controversial, and I apologize for the audio that jumped around there. We got some issues here with the equipment at Odyssey St. Louis. But here's what then happened Sunday morning with Margaret Brennan, and Marco Rubio is the guest.
Well, he was standing in a country where free speech was weaponized to conduct a genocide, and he met with the head of a political party that has far-right views and some historic ties to extreme groups. The context of that was changing the tone of it. And you know that the censorship
All right, so let me explain a little bit of what happened there with Margaret, because as a host that sometimes gets lost, you know, it happens. You get lost in your words, maybe you get challenged. She didn't know what the hell she was talking about, and she got lost there, and she got all wound up, and then she really sounded even more stupid, and then Marco Rubio did this.
Free speech was not used to conduct a genocide. The genocide was conducted by an authoritarian Nazi regime that happened to also be genocidal because they hated Jews and they hated minorities and they hated those that they had a list of people they hated, but primarily the Jews. There was no free speech in Nazi Germany. There was none. There was also no opposition in Nazi Germany. They were a sole and only party that governed that country. So that's not an accurate reflection of history.
Ouch! Margaret Brennan, how do you feel this morning? Anyway, J.D. Tuchili is with us. He is a contributing editor at Reason Magazine. We're going to also talk about the Department of Education, what might happen there. But this is something that obviously is getting a lot of attention. J.D., welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis. How are you this afternoon?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So how would you, I guess, even react to the reaction of what happened with J.D. Vance in Europe and what happened Sunday morning, et cetera?
Well, I mean, it was kind of nuts. Obviously, I would say Vance is right in calling out Europe on the free speech issue. I mean, European civil liberty groups have been chiming in and supporting him. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression chimed in and supported him in critiquing free speech in Europe. That said, I mean, is he the perfect vehicle for criticizing Europe? I mean, we can call it the Trump administration separately for some of the things they've done that are not as consistent with the free speech message as they ought to be. But Vance was absolutely right. Europe has been drifting away from traditional, shared liberal values of Western civilization for a number of years now. It's intolerant of dissent. It's intolerant of criticism of the political class. You can be arrested in Germany, and people have been arrested in Germany. This was on 60 Minutes for calling politicians names.
It's outrageous.
Just for saying that they're bad people.
Yeah. By the way, just to interrupt quickly, I'm going to get to that. Maybe even after I let you go here this afternoon, because I was horrified, and most Americans should be horrified by that 60 Minutes show or topic the other night.
Oh, absolutely. It should be. I mean, that just kind of showed how badly off course Europe has drifted in terms of being, in terms of maintaining the norms of free societies. You know, they're not respecting civil libertarian norms. So, I mean, it was good that Vance kind of brought this right to the center of Europe and made it a front and center issue, because Europe has been drifting off course for way too long.
But the broader message that also is being discussed, and I know you wrote a column about this, is the message that, look, we're no longer willing to subsidize what you're doing here with NATO if you're not anteing up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, and that was a separate speech by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. He went over there and he kind of shocked the allies by very clearly stating, look, there are a lot of demands upon American attention. We have global responsibilities, and Europe needs to step up to the plate and become more responsible for its own defense and become more responsible for the response in Ukraine to the Russian invasion. The Europeans got very upset about that also, but he was absolutely on target with that. In fact, the Secretary General, Mark Rutte, who's the former Dutch Prime Minister, Secretary General of NATO, admitted that. He said Canada and Europe have not been paying their fair share of the bills, and it's time that they stepped up and anteed up. So yes, I mean, Europeans are very upset this week.
Can they actually, I mean, what's preventing them from doing that fiscally? And if they do ante up, what happens economically? I'm guessing there's some concerns with spending the amount of money that's required.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, NATO right now has set a goal of 2% of GDP for each member country to spend on national defense. And as of the last annual report, of the 32 members, only 11 hit that 2%. Poland actually leads. Poland is almost at 5%. The U.S. is at 3.75%, I think, something like that. And President Trump wants to set 5% as the new goal. I mean, a big problem for Europe, even though the U.S. represents 53% of GDP of all the nations in NATO, and the rest of the countries combined represent 47%. But the U.S. spends more than two-thirds of all the money expended on defense. The rest of the countries combined are actually a little bit less than half of what we spend, you know, about 32%. So what's stopping them is priorities. For decades now, since the end of the Cold War, European countries have focused on their welfare states, on social services, on having a lot of expensive entitlements for their citizens, on having low retirement ages, 60 in France, for instance, even as life expectancy gets longer and longer. That's really pricey. And if you spend your money there, you're not going to have money to spend on tanks and on missiles and on troops. And they made that choice on the assumption that the U.S. would pick up the slack. Well, we're broke. And yeah. Not only that, but that's not our continent. And the U.S. is now making it clear that they've got to step up, which means they're going to have to make some very hard choices about their priorities.
J.D., let's talk about the Department of Education. J.D. Tuccioli is here. He is a contributing editor at Reason Magazine for years now. I mean, this really is for years. I know that this idea of getting rid of the Department of Education has been floated. And I've kind of, you know, referred to it on the show in this manner. You know, obviously, there are some of us who understand why you would want to kill the Department of Education and why that's not bad for kids across the country. But then the other side is like, wait a second, the Department of Education, that has to be important because it's a big federal bureaucracy. And what would we do if we didn't have the feds feeding all this money, et cetera? So, you know, for a lot of people, they don't want to think through this. You obviously have. But let's start with the history of this, because I think this is something a lot of people don't know. This was all created in the mid-1970s by Jimmy Carter in Congress, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this was a payoff to the National Education Association. Before Carter ran for president, the NEA, which is a big teachers union, had never endorsed a candidate for president. He promised that he would break out a new standalone Department of Education from the old Department of Health, Education, and Welfare if they would endorse him. They endorsed him. And he broke it out. He created this new department, you know, cabinet level, big new federal bureaucracy, represents about 3-4% of total federal expenditures. So not huge, but substantial. But the thing is, education remains primarily a state, local, and family issue.
That's right.
Even at this date, about 92% of all national spending on education is state and local. And all, of course, families do, too. Only about 8% comes out of the federal government. So you've got a big, expensive bureaucracy there that actually isn't responsible for educating a lot of people at all. What they do, though, is they make a lot of rules. And if you want to get that 8% of the funding, abiding by the rules is contingent upon, the funding is contingent upon abiding by those rules. And as a result, we have seen, the number of administrators in local school districts and public schools skyrocket relative to the number of teachers. So if you want to make education more efficient, a really easy way to do so would be to get rid of that federal education department that imposes all these rules so that localities don't have to have these high compliance costs, and then get rid of a bunch of those administrators and just focus on teaching kids.
Man, I would love that. I think a lot of my listeners would love that, but let's handicap the reality of that happening. Now, my position would be, and I heard the President Elon talk about this, even if you could maybe address some of the, you know, Leviathan aspects of the Department of Education, I think it would be worthwhile. But you wouldn't have expected that even under these circumstances, this would be achieved, or do you?
You know, I think it's doable, but there's a lot of inertia in government. And the thing is, once you say, okay, we can't do it, you're giving up on a possibility. And it's not only a possibility, it's something that kind of has to be done. We have to cut federal spending. We're spending way beyond our means. And if we don't do something like at least admit, you know, getting rid of a completely useless cabinet level department, if we can't do that, we're really just going to crash on the rocks in about 15, 20 years when the debt just gets too large for our country to manage. So we have to do something. Now, do you have to completely eliminate that department? Okay, let's step back from that a little bit. Maybe you just maintain the part that does block grants and get out of the imposing rules business. That would certainly cut a lot of expense down there, and it would also free up a lot, give a lot more leeway for local school districts, and also for more experiments in school choice. Maybe you can cut back and get them out of the student loan business. That worked out better when banks were doing it anyway, because it wasn't so politicized. You didn't have presidents trying to buy votes by forgiving student loans. There's things you could do that don't involve entirely getting rid of the department, but there really isn't a good excuse for maintaining that department at all. Everything it does that's of value, not very much, could be reassigned to some other agency.
You know, and I wonder if every once in a while I hear from teachers, and sometimes what I say is interpreted by teachers as being anti-teacher is never that way. And I've had teachers recently, when I've discussed this issue of either killing the Department of Education or some of the other reforms, that have said, look, we agree, and they want changes. They're frustrated by what's happened to American education, but this stuff is, to a certain extent and to a large extent, out of their control.
It largely is. I mean, public school teachers are really hamstrung by a lot of rules. Some of those rules are state and local. A lot of them are handed down though from the feds, and they're imposed on them as a condition of accepting federal funding. But if you get the public, the local districts off that federal funding, if you allow them to engage, to reduce the number of administrators they have, engage in more freewheeling education, make more experiments, teachers would have a lot more freedom to teach kids. They wouldn't be so bound up by these rule books. So I would think that teachers would actually be pretty enthusiastic about getting rid of that bureaucracy, at least.
What is your opinion of the scorched earth method of doing this right now? Because there's obviously a lot of criticism that's coming forward because of the way that Elon and Trump are doing some of these things. Now, my position would be, look, nothing else has worked. We've tried to, tick away at some of this stuff. And I do think that there's going to be an effort to, turn, as I've said, the spigot back on to some of these areas where maybe they've, cut the spending or shut it down. But I guess I'm in favor of the method only because in the end, maybe we get a little bit, not everything, of what we're demanding here or wanting. Does that make sense, J.D.?
Yeah, it does. I mean, honestly, we've been waiting for decades for Congress to get around to cutting something out of government, and they don't. And the fact is, there's not much political constituency for cutting government. And we've got really, let's remember, we got 1 year here, because the House of Representatives starts running for re-election after the end of this year. And they're not going to do anything risky while they're doing that. So we've got just this year to do anything dramatic. And if we're going to cut, I think DOGE is going to be our best bet. And if this doesn't work, I don't know what there is that keeps us from going broke, the federal government from going broke.
Yeah, I'm with
relatively
you.
Soon. So I'm pretty enthusiastic about it. Even though it's messy, even though there's mistakes being made along the way, I don't see anything else that's an alternative.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too. J.D. Tuchilly from Reason Magazine, a great libertarian outlet out there. Thank you so much, J.D. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Hey, Sue, he mentioned, did you see the 60 Minutes piece on Germany?
No, I don't watch that show anymore.
Well, you shouldn't. Here's the frustrating thing about 60 Minutes, okay, because we know here in St. Louis that they have come in and practiced really poor journalism, journalistic malpractice, when it comes to our city and Kim Gardner, not only 60 Minutes and Bill Whitaker, but Jeff Begays, who used to be with CBS News. So my level of trust for CBS is at a very, very all-time low. The irony of Margaret Brennan talking with Secretary Rubio about what started, Adolf Hitler in World War II is quite something compared to what I'm going to play you right now. And this was on 60 Minutes that very same night with the correspondent is Sharon Alfonsi. Now, to me, it seems like 60 Minutes and the gang at CBS are kind of cheering some of this stuff on. But what they're doing in Germany should scare the hell out of every single American. There's a movie that I always recommend, and it's called The Secret Lives of Others. It's a German foreign language film from maybe even 20 years ago. And it is just a stunning representation of, this is post-World War II, into the Cold War, and the Stasi and how they operated in East Germany. It's just frightening, you yes. know, in listening in on people, actors, you know, artists, people like that. Disgusting. We don't want, this country should be completely opposite from whatever they do in that country based on history. But here's what they're doing now. Let's say that you're a German politician, right? Let's say you're the mayor of a All city right. like St. Louis, right? And you're a bad mayor like Tisch. And people start making fun of you. Maybe they mock you. Maybe they put a caricature up or they put something online that some people might deem inappropriate. Well, in Germany, that's a crime. And not only is it a crime, but they're actually doing raids in the early morning hours to root these people out.
It's 6:01 on a Tuesday morning, and we were with state police as they raided this apartment in northwest Germany.
Hier ist die Polizei. Wir mussten bitte mal mit Ihnen reden.
Inside, six armed officers searched a suspect's home,
yeah.
then seized his laptop and cell phone. Prosecutors say those electronics may have been used to commit a crime.
Uh-oh.
The crime? Posting a racist cartoon online.
Yeah, that's the crime.
Exact same time across Germany, more than 50 similar raids played out. Part of what prosecutors say is a coordinated effort to curb online hate speech in Germany.
Now, mind you, I'm sure that there's a good portion of the American left that would support this. And in fact,
wow.
What I saw in Sharon Alfonsi's reporting is them cheering this on, saying, hey, we should do this in our country because we have
Seriously?
All these nasty right-wingers out there. It's unbelievable that this is, you know, we have to, and I've said this and I think we all realize, we take our freedoms for granted. You look at even Canada and some of the restrictions that they have up there. It's outrageous. We love our freedom here. And freedom-loving Americans spoke very loudly in November when they went to the polls. But some of this that they portrayed on 60 Minutes is downright frightening.
What's the typical reaction when the police show up at somebody's door and they say, hey, we believe you wrote this on the internet?
They say, in Germany we say, das wird man wohl doch mal sagen dürfen. So we are here with crimes of talking, posting on the internet, and the people are surprised that this is really illegal to post these kind of words.
They don't think it was illegal?
No, they don't think it was illegal. And they say, no, that's my free speech. And we say, no, yeah, free speech as well, but it is also has its limits.
Obviously.
No, it does.
Yeah, uh-huh. It has its limits. But the question then becomes, who are the arbiters, right? Well, the
Correct.
Arbiters in this country were Joe Biden and,
yeah.
you know, his Department of Justice.
That's right. Who defines what this is?
Right. So we... I mean, I guess the German people feel like there's so many threats to someone doing a cartoon that is deemed racist. They have so little crime that they're sending in teams of, you know, police, armed police.
That
not
is
unlike what
scary.
Happened in the 1960s in Eastern. It is scary. So there's a couple more bites here that I wanted to play.
You're launching all these investigations. You're finding people, sometimes putting them in jail. Does it make a difference if it's a worldwide web? And there's a lot of hate out there?
I would say yes, because what's the option? The option is to say we don't do anything? No. Well, we are prosecutors. If we see a crime, we want to investigate it. It's a lot of work. And there are also borders. It's not an area without law.
They're very proud. These prosecutors that
wow.
she sat down there and spoke with, they feel like they're doing a yeoman's job of rooting out really bad people because they say things on the internet and Twitter that they're not a fan of. Now, they talked to this one German politician.
Renat Künast is a prominent German politician. In 2015, this meme of the Green Party member appeared on Facebook, falsely implying that she said every German should learn Turkish.
You never said that. I never said that. And this harms my reputation because people think she's a bit crazy. How can she say that?
So I don't know the entire I don't know exactly what happened with her situation, but isn't there a chance that it was parody or satire? That's the thing that is, you know, not even discussed here. I don't even think Sharon Alfonsi brings it up. So think about it, Sue. I would definitely be in prison for life. Anything that I would have put on Twitter about Tish, the mayor of St. Louis, or Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, let's face it, half the things that people posted, if not more, about Kamala Harris by the American left would be deemed racist, because everything is racist to them.
Right.
That would be punishable by an arrest and a fine and maybe some jail time.
And it seems like the people don't know that. They were saying that, oh, yeah, we go to their apartments and we say, oh, you're under arrest. And
yeah.
They say, no, it's our free speech.
Right.
They say, nope. So how is this happening?
Because it's Germany. And this guy, look, they go to this guy here, and he's proudly showing off all of the case files.
How many cases are you working on at any time?
In our unit, we have about 3,500 cases per year.
Nine investigators work out of this office in a converted courthouse. Lau says they get hundreds of tips a month from police, watchdog groups, and victims.
You must see a lot of crazy stuff.
Yes, yes.
The worst of the internet is wrapped in red case folders, stuffed with printouts of online slurs, threats, and hate.
I've long felt, and this is another one of those instances where I really do feel, and I think a lot of us feel this about a younger generation, my kids would be included in this group, that we do not have the deep appreciation that we should have for the freedoms that we enjoy here in this country, because
yes.
Sometimes it's little things that we don't even think about, right?
Yep.
And we all want to hate America, all the people on the other side, and they have the freedom to do that. And I support that. This is why, by the way, I've never been opposed to, I want to be careful here. I am opposed to burning flags. I do not think it should be a crime to burn a flag. That is a freedom of speech issue. It's revolting. I think it's disgusting that someone would do that. But there are things, I mean, I think you can look at alcohol, you could look at tobacco, you could look at pornography, a lot of things that adults do. Maybe they're not all good for us, but we have the freedom to do it in this country, where in other countries, they don't. Now, that's horrifying to me that Germany, of all places... I guess they don't, Sue. I guess they don't even realize the irony. Because, again, you could hear it in the prosecutors' voices. I could translate those to Shara Jones or some of the other crazies here in St. Louis. They think they're actually rooting out evil. They're evil. It's pretty crazy. All right, we got Sue's News coming up in the next hour. Dave Murray with a forecast update at 4:07 as well. We got more weather moving in. Dave Murray is going to give us the very latest on that right before Sue's News. Right after he does that, I will. I got to surprise my wife and daughter with a cruise for Valentine's Day. My wife kind of knew because I had to get that cleared, but I recorded the video of Alexa finding out on Friday, and I want to share that. Then I have a story to share about my idiocy, which is something I really excel in, Sue. I don't know if you've noticed that. There's a little pattern. You've worked with me now for about 4 years.
Oh, yes.
Very proud of it, and I have to point out that I don't have to share these things, you know? I do it for the audience.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get to that. We have Michael Boyd. You know, one of the questions we had as we opened up the show, Michael's great. We missed hooking up with him a couple of weeks ago because he was in such high demand. He is a great aviation analyst and expert. He's the president of the Boyd Group International. He'll have the very latest on what happened at Toronto's Pearson Airport. And then, you know, as so often is the case, and this is true, certainly with the fires in L.A., with the hurricane relief in North Carolina, we all move on from these stories, right? Everybody moves on. So we'll see if he's got some thoughts on what happened with the helicopter crash and some of the other things, because it has been a real weird period for airfare.
Super
right?
Weird,
yeah,
yes.
Very bizarre. So we have Michael coming up at 4:25. We didn't visit with Frank yesterday. Cusimano will be here. Arenado is in Jupiter, so it looks like we have last year's third baseman or the past year's third baseman going to be our new third baseman. He seems to be kind of rolling with it right now. I have not watched. I know a lot of the people in this country, actually a lot of people on the planet, are watching the Four Nations face-off tournament. That's gotten pretty hot, man. Like
I don't,
The other day, Fred's better at this than I am because he's more of a hockey guy. And I have not been watching this, even though I see the highlights. But he basically said the other night, he was texting me, I think in the first couple of minutes of the game, there were like 7 fights or something like that.
Because Canada insulted us. They booed it
right
when our national anthem was being played.
Right. We should have kicked their ass, right?
And so, yeah, we socked it to them.
Yeah, what did he say? He says, are you watching USA Canada? Three fights in the opening 9 seconds.
Yep. We did not love take hockey? To it well, yes.
No. Well, good. I'm glad. And I think we're doing pretty well. And the Tkachuk brothers are obviously involved. Although I think Brady is hurt right now.
Oh, no.
One of the brothers is hurt. But we'll get to that with Cusimano. J. Peter Zane at 507. Peter, he goes by Peter, is a great editor at Real Clear Investigations and wrote some stuff about Doge that I want to explore. We have an audio cut of the day as well coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. It just feels weird this week, as I mentioned earlier, just because of the three-day weekend. We were off yesterday. I'm completely thrown off. I've had to think several times today, what is the day? And the weather doesn't really help things.
No, it doesn't.
Because, sure. You know, and can I, if I look outside right now, Sue, is it snowing at all?
I don't think so.
We will, though, have the very latest with Mr. Dave Murray coming up here as we get into the 4 o'clock hour. Hang in there. Two more to go here on the Mark Reardon Show on a Tuesday.
Get more at 971talk.com.